Eddie Harris with Listen Here. It's an all-time classic. Eddie Harris, you should know, invented the business of electrifying instruments. In fact, the instrument he's playing now, tenor sax, he electrified it. And it's apropos that the song comes from the album The Electrifying Eddie Harris from 1968. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today we have a bunch of primaries being run, Democratic primaries all over the country. I'm particularly interested in the primary for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York. I'm hoping that she pulls through. It would be such an encouragement to younger people coming into the political realm. And we'll see how she does tonight. Well, if you get a good education and then get a good job, and you work hard, it's all but guaranteed, isn't it, that you will have a good life. It's, after all, the American way. But then you find that many people look around after they've done all that, and they see that so many others who are not nearly as smart as they are, or as hardworking, are enjoying great prosperity. Is that too the American way? They start to wonder, these people who have done all the right things, gotten a good education, getting a good job, hoping to move on in life, upward and onward in life. They start to wonder, what is his secret? What is her secret? What does he or she know that I don't? Why don't I, why can't I seem to have that kind of life? Well, I think there are many reasons, and I'm hoping we can discuss this today. Why is it that this assumption that we can all have a good American life, the old American way, why does it seem to elude so many people? They can't have a life that they had imagined they could have had or still could have. What went wrong? Is it that these people who are or who had been grooming themselves to participate in the great American experiment, they over expected things to happen. They had higher expectations than they should have. What happened? Because even now, as we see all this social turmoil in the United States, a lot of it has to do with this question. How is it that I've done all the right things? I've gone to college, I've studied, I had little jobs, I saved some money, and I got married and have kids, and I just can't seem to get there. And there are people who haven't done a damn thing. They They didn't go to college. They didn't get all exercised about it. And not only are they there, they're in charge. They have a commanding presence in the spheres of influence that really govern America. They're the captains of industry. They are the people making the laws. They are in charge of commerce. They're making a lot of money. They're not especially smart, as I said. They didn't bother to make all these sacrifices that a bunch of other people did. So, how do we explain that? How do we explain that? And it's getting worse because the gap is getting wider and wider, harder and harder to bridge. Just as soon as you think you, well, I'll go back to school and get this degree, you come out with your degree, but you're 4 years behind. Whatever it is you went to study is no big deal anymore. There's something new, and you're not part of it. You have no clue how to acquire those skills. And you're older now, and you are clearly expendable. You're now relegated to choose from that block, if you're lucky enough to choose from a block of jobs that might be available that are several steps down from where you expect it to be. And you're faced once again, to be competitive. You've got to go and get new degrees. Get yourselves re-credentialed just to earn a living. How did we get that? How did that happen in our society? And why is it that we don't panic about it? We don't see that this is very, very bizarre. A very bizarre way to run a society. You constantly have people who are out, they're out of it. No matter what they do, they can't catch up. They can't earn the livings that they had been expecting to earn. Therefore, they have to curtail their ambitions. You can't buy a house, you can't get married, you can't have children. The money that supports all of that simply won't be there. So maybe you have some idea to how this works. How is it that we ended up with a society with such a deep cleavage? What caused it? Could it be bridged? Could it be corrected? Is it possible that a more just and equal society can be created? And you see, when we talk about equality, talking about, well, you have a degree and I have a degree, it's the same degree. No, that's the simplistic interpretation of it. We live in a very complex society. And we aren't the ones making the rules. The rules are made being made. I mean, look who occupies the White House. If all were fair in the world, there is no chance that Donald Trump would be president of anything. let alone the United States of America. There are people who are driving buses who are far more competent, far more capable than he is, but they don't have the job. And they won't ever have the job. So, help me understand this. What is the answer to this question? How is it that we have this kind of anomaly in the United States? It's been going on for years, and people have adjusted to it. But sooner or later, we will hit the wall about what is it that is promised? What is it that we are to expect because we are, quote, Americans, unquote? What is this American way that is supposed to guarantee us a decent life? A reasonable amount of happiness and contentment. Why are they telling us these things? That you work hard, you put in your time, you get your piece of paper or your credentials, and you're on your way to being a very productive American. And yet we look around, we see all these people who've done all of that. And they're not being productive. They say something is in the way. What is it? Why don't you share your ideas of what this invisible thing might be? And how is it affecting our nation? How is it affecting the growth and stability and the productivity of our nation? What could be done about it, if anything? 888-874-4888 is the number to call to express your point of view. And I'm hoping that you do have a point of view and don't dance around the subject. Be very straightforward. What is it that I'm talking about? How is it that so many of us have prepared ourselves to take our places, as from our point of view, our rightful places in the society by dint of going to college, having jobs that further amplify our experience and our qualifications? How is it that so many people are not participating in the rewards of our society? What's going on? What's happening? Is it that they all of a sudden become unqualified? Something happens to their brains, and they're not suited for any kind of job at all. And they just have to go along and try to get along. And that would be the story of their lives until they age out and die. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Treat. How are you today?
Okay, how are you doing?
Oh, well, I'm still alive in South Carolina, which is
That's good.
well, it's akin to Florida. Good grief. Listen, our society is so broken, and you are on fire. I listened to the podcast from yesterday's show, I think it was.
Yeah.
And this is what needs to happen. That you're doing the right thing. You have been so low key, not low key, but willing to listen. Well, you're still willing to listen, but people need to hear it. They just need to hear the truth because it's in our face and the other folks don't care anymore. So I'm not going to rant. I'm going to try to answer you. provide something of an answer to your question. I don't even know if it's an answer, but I think that we have a convergence of white supremacy and the end precipitate of unbridled capitalism at the same time. Because any way you look, like you have been saying, in a fair world, this putting up with what we're putting up with, what did we do, Americans, period, regardless of race, but to even put up with this nonsense? That's number one. Everything should have stopped. People should have just surrounded the White House and said, look, you have to go. And you know whose children, I think a case could be made for elder abuse. They know that man is not fit. But I don't want to get off on a tangent. You know, there was a professor on NPR earlier today, and he raised a good point that doesn't come up often enough. And he provided a juxtaposition between reparations and land grants, which happened in close proximity to each other. So a bunch of white folks got free land or very low-cost land, and we didn't even get 40 acres, and we were just thrown out, you know, and kind of protected by the federal government during Reconstruction for a while. And by the way, look at the progress that colored folk made, the Negro made, in just a handful of years during Reconstruction. In fact, in this state, you know, we dominated politics because it's one person, one vote on the state level. And we had competent people. And that was just unacceptable. We need to, this is the time to really grasp on, now that people are finding out about Tulsa, which I don't know what took so long, but that wasn't the only incident. You know, so we need to get the word out, because we'll never have the wealth that we're supposed to have. And don't listen to any of these stupid arguments. People are just ignorant and stupid, and they don't engage in critical thinking. You know, it's like we can't win. If you have too much, they knock you down. If you don't have anything, they say, why don't you have anything, while they have your, literally their foot on your neck. Because I think one thing that's being lost with this police, these police executions, is what happens in between. Because as many black folks know, it's easy to get, people get in trouble all the time for doing nothing. And what happens is that you get arrested enough and it reduces your earning potential. And I think that is absolutely a plan. I'm not saying all officers are racist, because all officers are not white. But it's a gang. And they don't like to hear that, but it is the truth, and they operate as such. And that's part of the problem. And let me say this real quick, too, because I think this is important.
So why this dichotomy if people still, even under these circumstances, they're going to school, they try to get a degree, they're trying to get a decent job and so forth, but it's just not happening?
Well, because that's what people have been taught. I don't know that I would send my child to school now. To higher education. I mean, I would want them to be a professional, but look at the cost. Who can afford higher education now? Who can afford that? And it doesn't matter, because what happens is that when you get hired, when you're on salary, let's say at a university, you don't really know what other people are making. You go, you know, they say, okay, we want to hire you, and then they send you to human resources. And they tell you what they're going to pay you. You know, you write it down on a piece of paper, you tell them what you want. And here are the benefits, and here's, but you know, it's a crapshoot. That it's like buying a car; you're just kind of out there. And but then we know from studies, there's something called it every year, every all the time, something called testing. That's been going on probably since the late 50s, early 60s, where in every aspect of life, a comparable black couple and a white couple will be sent to rent an apartment, buy a car. You know, transactions, anything that, you know, what normal people do. And it's amazing. We come out at least a third lower on any metric, which is statistically significant, roughly, you know. So I'm sorry, but Can you ask me again and get me on track here?
Well, you were getting a lot off. Let's bring it to the here and now. What is accounting for this cleavage in America now? Not just racial, but we have, you know, we have to have some kind of explanation. More African Americans and Latinos and Asians are going to college. So why are these groups not being reflected as captains of industry, as leaders in particular fields?
Well, the power structure, you know, the power elite, they're still white. That's old money. And they're not giving up control. And I think we can look at some of these Supreme Court decisions like Citizens United, other decisions. We've gotten some good votes, but, you know, let's just be honest. White folks are scared, including senators, you know, that of the browning of America. Because it's competition. And this country's always been racist. You know, and you know, people need to ask themselves a question. Why do white folks get upset? The worst thing you can call a white person is racist. And they can be the most racist person in the world. But if you call them racist, they get very upset. And you present them with facts, and, you know, this is how you're behaving. And they'll say, well, I don't have a racist bone in my body. And I'm like, well, that's probably true. You know, every bone in your body is racist. But you said it's not, you know, don't talk about ethnicity. Okay. Well, you know, we'll go back to the economics. See, that's the only thing this country really respects is violence and money. And I think that history has borne that out.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about. You put a lot on the table. Let's see how people react. Thanks, Khalil, for calling and contributing today. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you feeling?
Okay, how's by you?
Well, you know me and my thumbs. My famous well-deserved thumbs.
Hanging still by your thumbs, still. I mean, this is a record.
It's become very developed throughout the many months. As the Chinese proverb goes, we live in interesting times. Let me endeavor to answer your question as far as what is this invisible force or entity that prevents unity in this great country of ours. America, in my opinion, is based on a lie. It always has been. The Declaration of Independence was written by men who owned slaves. The Bill of Rights was written by men who suppressed rights. And the bottom line was not the cream of the crop came from Europe to America. People who were in debtor's prison, people who didn't really have anything going on in Europe, took the risk to come to America because the first initial colonies that came here, the people died. Croatoa, the first Virginia colonies, they were found evidence of cannibalism in the colonies until they developed a relationship and a false friendship with the Native Americans that were here, with the Native people that were here and learned how to live off the land. They died out. And even after they developed these friendships, quote unquote, to learn to live off the land, once they acquired superior numbers, they killed the indigenous people and had celebrations about it. So the one thing that America had going for it was that it was a large country with many natural resources at a time when the world needed natural resources, copper, wood, cotton. All of these things led to the growth of America and its rise to a world power over the centuries that the Great American Experiment existed. And that wealth was enough to satiate the ambitions of the immigrants that came here. And that kept the lie going. But now we're reaching a point to where America is running out and the lie is starting to be laid bare. And people aren't satisfied with it, but they don't know what to do. They don't know how to direct their anger and their frustration at this great deviation. And that's why we're having these large movements and confusion. There's no direction to it, but it's an anger. It's an anger because the lie is becoming blatantly clear now that the promise of America was never real and was only intended for a very few people in this country.
Do you think this would improve?
America, presently, if you look at empires throughout history, empires get destroyed and something takes their place. And I think that's the only thing that's going to happen to America in the not too distant future. Empires fall, and this empire is about to fall. There's a direct absence of leadership. There's an absence of character. There's an absence of moral turpitude. There's an absence of testicular
fortitude.
Well, you
do want an absence of moral turpitude.
Yes.
You don't want moral turpitude. You want that to be absent.
Well, I mean, there's an absence of morality, let us say. There's
That's
an absence of decency, of bravery, of the character that could bring us out of this and allow this country to live up to the lie that it tried to perpetrate, because there's not enough resources to keep the people happy anymore. There's not enough capital. There's not enough finance. There's not enough ability to move upwardly mobility that there used to be to keep the people satisfied with the American dream. Well, no, I'm just saying that the dream, the lie is it's over, and there's no clear vision in this government or in this idea of America. It's, you know, there's been too much corruption. There's been too much compromise. The greatest glaring, the most glaring example of that is who's president of these United States. I mean, you said it yourself. In any other configuration or circumstance, this man would never even be, even 10 or 15 years ago, this man would never even be, would never even be considered dog catcher, let alone commander-in-chief of the United States. And now there's a question of whether he'll be elected again. I mean, that in itself says volumes about this country, this people, and where this system and where these people are at.
Do you get the sense that people are moving in whatever ways they can, whether they're moving together, whether they're moving individually, to basically turn this around in the best way they can, however they can, because it won't be too long before it will be too late?
I think people are moving, but they're not moving cohesively. They're not moving together. They're moving at it's a whole bunch of light and noise and fury, but there's no direction. And that has to do with a lack of community, a lack of leadership, a lack of focus. And I don't think much is going to come of it. I mean, there are gestures here, the innuendos there, the little laws and things that get changed. But the root problem, the underlying condition that is the inequality that has made this country, whether you want to call it reparations, whether you want to call it racism, whether you want to call it social inadequacy, those core things are not being addressed. And until those things are addressed, until there is an equality amongst all of us, these issues are always going to manifest, and they're not going to get any better. You can't stick a knife in my back 10 inches, pull it out 5, and say, yeah, I'm going to be all right. You got to remove the knife and repair the wound. And nobody's considering that yet, as Malcolm said.
Well, thank you. Very thoughtful. As usual, thank you very much, Ed, for your contribution today. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm coming. Thank you. Yes, greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you, and to you too.
Thank you. It's hard to know, and I say thanks with a T-H, capital A-N-K-H-S. Thanks. But this is a question that explains why there's such a sustained protest and continuous, because these things usually die out But we're in the, it's probably a good time to pick up 1984 and Brave New World if you haven't read it recently, because that's where we seem to be heading. And then, and I'm not just trying to be funny, but I suggested to George Norrie that he bring some scholar on around what you might term karma. In that the guy back in the 1850s who did a book saying the last president and called him by name, we are so not headed in a good direction that we need to figure out community. And just think about how certain people came here and set up their stores and businesses. I forget what they call it, but they had what was that called? Because people from the Caribbean also was it a Sioux where they have a pot of money and they pass it around to each person that had their entrepreneurial idea, or I guess it was mostly stores at that time, right? So we need to get down to brass tacks and figure out the inequality in this society at present is just going, you know, rocket speed in the wrong direction. I got this call around a survey from Columbia University, which is interesting. It comes from a number that you don't recognize, so you get the particulars to make sure because they're going to pay you $10. Well, the company that actually they contract with to do the survey, a 10-minute survey, actually pays... It was just remarkable. First of all, certain states, like New York State, is excluded, so maybe they know that you couldn't live. But they pay so much less than work I did on the telephone. Say they pay $9 and work I did 30, 35 years ago where I got $10 per hour in an office situation, you know, doing freelance independent contract work. And so they're going way, way, way in the wrong direction, okay? And Germany, I think, back 20-plus, 30 years ago, like their average minimum wage was like $20 per hour. So I think a solution is we need to put together parts of a system, a government, a society that takes all these pieces and basically says that this is how we have to live in a society that makes sense, because this is karma that's coming down. It's not going to be good.
But karma or no karma, let's look at it in isolation, if you will. Although we know that we're talking about it in the context of a society. How do you see this bifurcation? We have whites and then we have everybody else. And whites, are they living better? They have better jobs. They're making more money. They have a better life. And the rest, well, they just have to do the best they can. And even when they do that, most often it's not enough.
And for a lot of so-called whites, it's not turning out to be enough. I think what the core root problem has to be addressed, and it also relates in some way to the work of Dr. Francis Quest Wellson. I mean, in the respect that we have to uncover or deconstruct the very idea of whiteness. A recent This Week magazine, I think it was the one with a brother.
Yeah, but you're taking us off into a whole little tangent.
But this is a solution.
The
issue. This is a solution, okay? And you can't always say a solution in a sentence, but the solution
is... Help us understand, because where you are now, it will take a couple of steps to get there. How right this minute? How is this to be seen? How is it to be treated? How is it to be regarded by the very people who have done a lot to improve their lot in life, but it's not happening?
Well, I like to think in terms of solutions. And solutions are, first of all, we have to understand community and what community is. We have to do some economic pieces, you know, in terms of becoming more self-reliant. And I think we have to... I go back to the blueprint, because when you have a blueprint of what's needed, you know, it's not pie in the sky. It's what you can mobilize people to move toward. And let me just make this last point. We are in some sort of different seminal moment, because after Michael Brown was killed and there was a gentleman having a mental episode, young brother, and if you remember that footage where the police pulls up, and I think he's saying to them, shoot me or something. He supposedly had a little knife in it. But the first thing they did was shoot him. It was on camera, and then they immediately put handcuffs on him. So the point that I'm trying to make is that how did we get past the idea that nobody's threatening, is just immediately shot to kill, and then they handcuff him as he's bleeding out? I'll let you flesh out. I think you understand the point that I think we're at a different point, and I think we have to ride with it, because how we tolerated that, and it was a pattern, you know, shoot, handcuff immediately, no help at all in terms of medical help, or same thing we saw with I think the funeral of Brother Brooks is today, you see, and they stood on him, you see. So I think the point I guess I'm trying to make is that something is different now, and to me, that's more hopeful than not.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for your contribution. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. How you doing?
And because we can't beat around the bush. I think you're asking for analysis of what's going on, and as I see it, the chief thing that we ought to take into consideration, that this is an oligarchy, and it was never intended to be a democracy. And what we see now are the people who run the oligarchy doing what is necessary to maximize profit for their own benefit. And as we say, it's going to be quite simple. If you're going to rule, you must divide people. You must separate people, and they're doing a good job at it. So these people of color, I guess you're alluding to people who've gotten credentials and whatnot, maybe even up to a PhD or some kind of doctorate, why they're not doing well and all that sort of thing, and they're not doing as well as the designated, invented group of people called white. You know, that's natural for an oligarchy that to be able to separate people and regardless of their credentials. So, you know, people have to realize that this was a nation created from ethnic cleansing and genocide. The Constitution was written by slaveholders who never intended for it to be a democracy. And this idea that if you go to school and get your credentials and all that kind of thing, regardless of what some people may think, that's ridiculous, because when you're an oligarch, you're going to use every way you can to divide up the people so you can expand your riches. And under capitalism and empire, which is the United States, a capitalist worldwide empire, why would you want democracy, or why would you want people to be dealt with on terms of merit? You know, what we're alluding to is merit, and you're supposed to be qualified and rewarded according to merit. That's ridiculous. I know people who have doctoral degrees who are poor, you see. So the point that I'm trying to make is the nature of American capitalism, and I'm not talking about Sweden and Norway. American capitalism is to do exactly what they're doing and keeping people in check. And American capitalism has African people that were brought over as kidnapped, enslaved people, and a large enough group of them to play the ones with the invented title of whiteness against each other and manipulate the whole the whole place for its benefit, and it's doing very well at what it has worked out. And, you know, so we're talking about presidents. People keep talking about how negative Donald Trump is and how he's ignorant and all that. You know, I don't see that way, because the president of the United States is not put up there to be good to the people. He represents the interests of the ruling class. We don't have parties in this country. There's no parties here that represent the people. We have something called Democrat Republic, but they have the same interests. They are controlled by the oligarchy and the ruling class. So people need to get that through their head. They wishful thinking and to think that they're going to do right by the people who live there. They're not interested in that. They're interested in one thing only, all over the world, profit for themselves.
So basically, we should disabuse ourselves of the notion that things can change, and that elusive business of we're all one and the same.
Yes.
It's not going to happen.
Yes, I think that's correct. And the only way things can really change is if it got to the point of revolution. Yeah, a ruler, an oligarch, like the people we have here in this country that run the country and run these parties, they're just not going to give things up. They're going to just manipulate and play with people when a crisis comes up, throw out bones when necessary. They don't mind giving up a few statues and quieting the people down. They'll do whatever is necessary to manipulate the proletariat to where they want, so they can continue raping, robbing, as they did from the very start. That whole country is built on rape, robbery, and murder, and genocide. You know, I mean, so to think that they're going to change around because you went to Harvard and got your PhD, that's ludicrous.
Your PhD means nothing.
That's right. Every one of my children has at least a doctoral degree. That doesn't save them from the normal American racism. So, you know, I mean, just people need to change their idea and stop wishing. They don't understand the system they're living in. You know, not everybody is listening to my podcast on YouTube. So the point is that people stop wishing and get to understand your system you live in. If you don't understand the system you're living in, they're going to play you for a fool. And that's what they're doing. Get you voting for the Democrat Party, and some are voting for the Republican Party. That's not your party. They don't represent your interests. The people have no, where's the people's party? There's none. There's none. This is a dictatorship between of the Unit Party, that Republican Democrat. That's what it is. There's no viable party. They make sure. And the illusion that they want you to have the illusion of democracy and by having elections, but in most places, the elections are all rigged up, and every state controls this election, so they can rig it any way they want, and there's no guarantee in the Constitution anywhere that you have a right to vote. So that's part of the game. You know, learn the game. Understand the game you're in, and stop wishing that things are going to get better on the basis of when there's an outrageous murder like Mr. George, and things are going to change. They're not going to change. They'll let go a couple of statues of Robert E. Lee and so forth. But if you're expecting a change, that is absurd. There's not no one with this type of power and with this type of income that they have in this rapacious type of capitalism in the United States is just going to give it up by doing the right thing and treating everybody fair. This place is not created to treat anybody, everyone fair and square and all that and just. This is ridiculous. So stop wishing that rattlesnake is going to turn into a pussycat. And that's what you got here.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your lesson today. Thank you very much, Henry. Henry is next from Chicago.
Hey, Trice, how's it going?
Okay. What are your thoughts on this question?
All right. Let me attempt to answer this question. So I think all of the previous callers have brought up some very cogent points, and it probably relates to what I am thinking the basis of all of this inequality is basically the system of white supremacy, along with unmoral capitalism right behind it. So generally, before I went into corporate America, and I worked for corporate America for, 20 years, my father always told me that, when you're competing against the next white man or white woman with the same credentials, you're going to have to work twice as hard to get, a step up. And when he told me that, I was young, but I didn't realize that until I got there and realized that I got passed up for promotions from people who are white who didn't even have the credentials I had. So I started to realize, okay, I'm in a different game now. And this is a game that is not geared towards me or anybody that looks like me. And looking at the landscape of it, yeah, I started seeing, not too many people of color in the higher positions. You might find a few sprinkled here and there. And then everybody else, of color, works in the mailroom. But at the same time, some of us who do obtain this wealth or dream that you were talking about, that most of us have never experienced, they are indoctrinated that you're too good to live in the neighborhood you live in because there's too many black people around there. So they end up moving to, places where predominantly, white people and rich white people live at. So we are indoctrinated with the system of white supremacy that, first of all, you're not going to get the job. If it's a competition between you and the next white person, that white person is going to get it. And even if you do make it past that round, you are taught that you are not to be communal with people that look like you. You are not to be associating with people that look like you because we don't want you to start community with people because you have gained some resources. And this is the thing with, and I'm not demonizing anybody who, if you're black or anything like that, and if you, get a high paying job or become rich or anything like that. But these people have been taught not to give back. So that kills the communal aspect of what you've always been talking about us, you know, regaining community. And, you know, once you get a little, you know, some trinkets from the white, you know, from white people, you know, they told you not to share it with, you know, with us. So and then it starts, you know, and they indoctrinate us with this through our education system, which is also a racist system, because obviously they don't prepare many of our black children, you know, to compete, you know, in this world. And basically they basically kind of, you know, kill their, I guess they kind of kill their confidence at an early age in regards to that. So it starts from birth. And if we don't have enough adults and parents who, you know, tell their children, like my dad told me, the type of game that I'm going to be playing against and be prepared for it, then children, you know, most of the second generation is going to go out here blind thinking, you know, the same rhetoric that you were mentioning about we're all equal, and if you just work hard, we'll get, you know, we'll get the American dream. And then, you know, find out that it's not true. And so then you get this rage that goes on, that's going on nowadays, is like, oh, I thought we were all equal. Well, we were never equal in the first place.
So when you realized that your father's words were in fact very, very insightful, what did you do?
Well, I had to readjust my strategy. And this is something that many black people like myself go through when, you know, when they're in that phase of their life trying to, you know, play within the system. And unfortunately, as far as the competition with, you know, other white people, they've already readjusted their strategy before I even readjust. So it's always a period of readjustment. And sometimes this period of readjustment gets so frustrating, you just basically opt out like I did. I'm not playing this game anymore. I'm going to find another way to do this. And this is what I appreciate with, you know, I would say I appreciate with, you know, the street hustlers. Because sometimes, because of the fact that they have not been through the rhetoric of, you know, formal education, they know that, listen, I'm going to have to fight and scrap every single thing that I get. And I can appreciate that spirit. I wish I kind of had that, you know, more of that spirit than I do now, because unfortunately, you know, I have been indoctrinated with, you know, white education. But, you know, some of the buddies that I grew up with are doing very well, you know, and they don't have, like, you know, college degrees, but they're hustlers. And I can appreciate that hustler spirit. So, yeah, sometimes we have to uneducate ourselves through this process, as you know, as Carter G. Woodson in his book Miseducation of the Negro always, you know, has told us.
Well, you told us quite a bit today, and I thank you, you and everybody else. And I also have to say that we've come to the end, officially the end of the program today. But we have quite a few people who haven't yet been able to offer their insights and their opinions. So that automatically means we continue this discussion tomorrow. It's very beneficial, very instructive, and it is time that we hear the unvarnished truth. We ourselves don't talk about it. As a society, we don't talk about it at all. So this is a very promising reaction, a very promising sign that it's time. So thank you all for listening and contributing today. And we'll kind of gather again tomorrow and see what the new voices are saying. And we'll get a better picture, a bigger picture of where we are through their insights. Thank you so much. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.